Timelessness landslide. My fear is buried now and gone. Life's shackles fragment as I go. Explore the odd phenomenon to whom my innocence I owe. Wondrous pleasure, terrifying beauty, envelops, overcomes, diminishes me. My youth is buried now and gone, but still inside me burns my hope. The deus ex machina, fortis denimo, will reconstruct life's kaleidoscope. Chaotic, spinning, burdensome ends rip through life as it fractures and bends. My passion's buried now and gone, the EKG a temptress cry. I hope to go before the dawn, if not, then please just let me die. Begging, borrowed, or to steal, more time so brief and yet not real. My will is buried now and gone, no one remembers who I am, or what I'm like, or where I'm from. I'll not abide the slaughtered lamb. Tired, drained of life and worth, dying in the embers of a freezing hearth. My body buried now, I'm gone. Do not mourn me, I won't know. Eternity is a whisper from all those who before us go. And I'm going to do a stupid one now because that was sad.
I was like, is that the stupid one?
Perhaps I could do both.
I'm speaking out here with the again.
I'm watching very little TV at the moment, which is unlike me, and this is just basically Luke Cage is one of the Marvel franchises. It's not about that at all, but I just called it I just called it the Rasclat love song, because Rasclat is apparently Jamaican slang for ass cloth, which I just thought was so funny. So it's a stupid poem. Are you capable of love? Is it something that you know? Do you feel inspired by it? Do you let it help you grow? Do you throw it by the wayside, showing what you are like inside? Is your love faux show? And are you yourself, or are you just someone else? Do you let your feelings out, or do you leave them on the shelf? Can you express all emotions with an alcoholic potion? Is it yes? No. Will you give me three fitty? Yeah, it really would be nifty, because I need it for the Lewis and the hostel in a jiffy. No man, I'm not high on crack, I just thought you'd have my back. I'm not a wino. Do you judge me by my worth, by the way I treat the earth and its occupants around me? Do I feel it when they hurt? Can I find enjoyment in it, or just fuck it up and bin it? Is it your business, though? I really should practice that.
Thanks a lot. Come here, Charles Clark, please. Quite a few years from now, I was in an antique shop quite close to here, a few streets away, and there was a very, very, very old man who offered me a confidence. It's a confidence from a late dealer. A couple of weeks later, I saw his death in the paper. So he had still been in a position to offer advice, or whatever you can call it, at that late stage of his life. A confidence from a late dealer. Faint reflection in a mirror in this small city. There are no longer craftsmen. Silver glass, obedient Dublin takes the trade.
Thanks, Charles. Can we have Pauline?
Basically, it's from the viewpoint of these little toads who I saw in this beautiful setting, but they were in a glass cage. And the person who had them there said that they were really happy because they had everything. He provided a whole environment for them to kind of be happy. And I just wrote this. Okay. Trapped on an island in a glass jar, who are you to say I'm happy? Leaping around with my amphibian brain, mating with females provided by you. you can be further than me to the land of my ancestors where I belong.
Woo-hoo!
Holly, can we have Jack Shortland, please?
Thanks, Rad. This is a bit different from the sort of stuff I normally do, so there's a refrain, so if you can help me out with the refrain, feel free to use it only if it feels right for you. My joke, and I really need to be it's forgiveness comes because it wants to. Forgiveness is not about forgetting. It's nothing to do with doing the right thing. Forgiveness comes because it wants to. Forgiveness is not about making up. It's not about how we think things should be. Forgiveness comes because it wants to. We've heard resentment festers from within, the worm and the apple, the poison tree. So too, forgiveness works intrinsically. Forgiveness will not be hurried or forced. It feels no pressure to pardon outright. Forgiveness comes as it wants to. Forgiveness needs to run its course. It cannot be surgically induced. Forgiveness comes because it wants to. Woo! Thank you.
Thanks. Check for that. That's the poetry as prayer. Can we have Megan, please?
What?
He said boarding pass.
Settle down now. I wrote this last Thursday. By the end, you'll understand what it's about, so I'm going to go there. Okay. Today, I flew. I put my feet on the concrete and I flew. And then I moved my feet backwards and forwards, faster and faster, until I was effortlessly, I can't mess up this word.
Effortlessly.
I just can't say that word. Until I was gliding. The wind hit me across each cheek, as if it was slapping the self-doubt and self-pity out of me. All the negative thoughts and fears I've had over the past few months drifted away in the breeze with each graceful stride. And tears formed in my eyes from how fast I was going. And maybe these were tears of joy too. And with each step, my confidence grew. And next I was doing things it took me over a year to learn. I was warned not to try anything too mad. But what I did do astonished me. I put on my skates today after nearly 4 months. After 109 days, I put on my skates and flew. Well, maybe I didn't actually fly, but I was damn close to it.
Skating advert. Can we have Patricia Walsh, please?
Thank you, Rob. This is called Life in Exile After Abdication. This non-therapeutic adage slices the weather, picking up nightmares when running. Run on Stephen's main fallow. Rotating around as corrosion, highly strung. This is a wolf, a black fox worth commemorating. Pure as driven slush, more to walk on. Warm silver coffee going towards nowhere. Last remaining size pan, a trophy in itself. Distinctive voices covering a multitude. Perfect right to life, finding his own corners. Focus on the hard earned, never mind doll face. Shown the under tables, miniature tempest and thrall. This unified republic promises everything. Long after party is over, satisfied. Trained to some innocent, lightly salted. Measuring your own fanfare, as if it is true. Packaged under God, hormonal or maybe, hammered in submission like a prospective wife. Not sought the right man, yet time is telling. Stretching out, a discipline wanting a prize. Home on the mathematical and cubic thrall. Official engagement soars its purpose away. Quest for a man misunderstood in all towns. Bare tooth and horror, spirit of the city. Another problem on the finger, salt and road. Thank you.
We have Anna Spar.
So last Monday, Jim read his poem about our trip to Limerick. Now I'm reading mine. And the adventure begins as we sit in the bus, chatting and laughing, forgetting that there are other passengers, not just the two of us. We are acting like again we are 15. Me and Jim, my support, my friend, and my queen. We are doing poems, which was just amazing, and some fun at the local bar. We are ready to go home, sitting at the president's car. After a few wrong turns, we are on the right road, and me and Jim in our childish mode, inspired by poetry and maybe a few beers. Again, it's just the two of us and the stars in the sky. Everything else disappears. At the back of Stan's car, the whole world seems so far. It's just us and our lovers in the shape of a star. My lover, a big bad wolf that stole my dreams, made my heart weep. Not tonight. Tonight we turned him into a sheep. And Jim's lover, the one who doesn't know how to reply a simple text. Well, not tonight. Tonight he's just an ex.
And Jim, you can follow that.
My queen! The queen has arrived. And this poem, the title is One Day I Will Love Jim Cricker. I've been writing letters to myself for years. I finally got a reply in the post box. It read, please stop. I've been looking for my soul in the mirror. It finally spoke and said, staring at strangers is rude. I bump against myself at midnight in the hot pink light of my salt lamp, then roll over muttering, not tonight, I have a headache. After eating my feelings with too many snacks, I decided I would give up hope for Lent. At my family's Easter Sunday dinner, I am civil with myself, making subtle side eyes with myself in the mirror as I make nice. I fight myself when I get home that night. Sparks put smoke holes in the linoleum. I throw plates on the floor, arguing over a mid-dinner slight about the butter knife. I went to couples counselling, or as the sign read, regular counselling. My shadow sat with folded arms on the jade walls. My therapist concluded we had irreconcilable differences. I fired her because I refused to file for divorce. I know that I will want everything and expect alimony. In the yellow hours of night, I wave a white flag in the mirror, seeing all my 26 years refracted in the cracked glass. I see innumerable white flags waving back. And in the snowdrop stillness of this vigil, I know one day I will love Jim Crickert, and he will love me too.
Can we have Phillips Blend?
No! What's that? It's my name in my outfit. That is my name. Thank you. Yeah, that was like a self-portrait, Jim. Lovely. So I, inspired by the guest poet, I decided to do this poem. It wasn't originally what I was supposed to do, but yeah, I really liked some of their poems and I wanted me to do this one. This is based off a poem called Personal Moon, Light Sleep. And you ever hear of a strawberry moon?
Yes, I have.
No.
Megan has now.
a
strawberry moon is a full moon that comes on the 1st of May. And I remember, like, when it first came, or came into my own notice, someone reported it right here in Ovale, and we went, oh, that's cool. You found it out through Facebook. None of us went out to see it. We just all found out from social media, and none of us could appreciate that there was a full moon on the 1st of May, which was called the strawberry moon, and it was a beautiful phenomenon. And this poem is inspired by that, and a lot of the collection of Personal Moon is inspired by that, sort of like the dawn of technology, but not in a bad way, it's just appreciation of how our world is changing. Part one, light sleep. A light pleated face stares at a private moon that is always set to full. Lying on a bed, pre-set up, with the instrument resting on her knees. It has been on too long. And the summer short darkness has nearly ended. She reads A Strawberry Moon, which piques some sort of interest. And it's only a window away to see a real globe in a sea of cream clouds milked in its glow. But she stays solidified on her fake bed silks. She should really go to sleep.
Happy sounds are queer ones, and these are kind of slightly weird, but it is thinking about when I'm missing 3 men in my life, just to be honest with it, and missing in the summer, and it's always to be a sign, next thing big black crow's feather comes down in front of me, so I said right, and I keep getting them, and also I'd always say, well, the plough was over the back wall, Jordan, and he'd be telling me where the plough was in his continent, you know. So I'm not going to be dreary, but it's a dreary pair of sounds. So this is called Starter. Stars bow down, Orion melts the tender heart. Think how once I wished for one those nights. Mars Serenitatis is not so tranquil now. Craters burn down the dark side of the night. And more the poor back and more what the black feather gifts you bore. Shadows furl, by the sad thoughts thrill, but to the time this aching stops, you silent now must be. Times of me and you.
remember every moment, reaching for my hand. You call me from my dreams, from some crazy tragic land. Reset the clock, turn back the hand of time. That's hard to block what we thought was yours and mine. When I needed you, that second day, secrets came true. Don't look me in the eye. It's time that I gotta say goodbye to the times of me and you, the times of me and you, the times of me and you.
Come to best friend. Bye, lads.
Can we stand up, please?
Okay, so this first poem, you can take one of two titles if you prefer. When I originally wrote it, it was called Have I Told You Lately That I Love You? Which is a lovely title. You know, I'm kind of dark and depressing most of the time. So I changed the title to If You Found This, It's Probably Too Late. Oh. It's up to you. When the sun goes down, cigarette smoke and a certain romance catapult fake tales of you and I in San Francisco into my fright-lined dining room, where pretty visitors sticking mad sounds to the floor stand next to me and dancing shoes only you know recklessly serenade my favourite worst nightmare by my evil twin in a balaclava and knee socks, pause black treacle over you and I as dangerous animals, you and I as ever deadly nettles, you and I as fireside dirt. The choice of three you and I's where you're so dark indicates this house is a circus, that the time has come to snap out of it and break the lock on my little red book of fluorescent adolescence. But if I don't have my strange you and I's, the curtains close and I want to be yours. Dreamy days in your room, diamonds are forever. And that's too much to ask, Arabella. That's too much to ask. Because I believe in you and I, and whatever people say, my mistakes were made for you. So that's an old one that was written using the song titles of the Arctic Monkeys. As you all know, and most of you know, that's what I do. Last Friday night, I had the immense pleasure of being flashed back to my teenage years in the company of a great New York man, Mr. Paul Simon. He was brilliant. So this one is, and what, this is not really me, because Paul Simon is gentle and soft, so anyway, this is what came out. I know what I know. Sunday afternoon, feeling groovy with old friends, my heart and bones slip sliding away. A sparrow spiral highway patterns over a cool, cool river, and spirit voices rewrite questions to the angels. Nobody thinks too much about leaves that are green, the myth of fingerprints or the sound of silence on such a sunny day, but everything about this is a love song, and how the heart approaches what it yearns when late in the evening the 7 o'clock news bookends a church that's burning with a most peculiar man in gum boots and a poem on the underground wall about a clock stranded in a limousine. Wednesday morning, 3 a.m. Homeward bound after a long, long day. My heart and bones slip sliding away to dazzling blue satin summer evenings by the coast. And blessed, crazy love dangling between father and daughter.
And last, but by no means least, can we have a man called Horse.
This is a story that takes place in the 60s. Some of you may not have been around, so just to put it into context, at that time, the actor Richard Harris, anyone never heard of Richard Harris? Okay, he was making it big in America, making movies in Hollywood. He also had a very successful singing career. He even had a number one hit in America with the Jimmy Webb song MacArthur Park, which was unusual for two reasons. One, it was over 7 minutes long, and that took a lot of kahunas in the 60s. Not many people were doing that. And secondly, the song addressed an issue that others weren't really addressing at the time, and that was confectionery. Yeah, you heard me, baking. Not many people addressed that issue in song. 50 Cent did it more recently in a song that contained the immortal line, "I love you like a fat kid loves cake." Only in America. And the other thing that you might not know about Richard Harris was that he was very fond of drinking and carousing. And as a boy growing up in the 60s, I loved going to the pictures to watch cool westerns with cool non-cowboy names like Geronimo and Cochise, and my all-time favorite, A Man Called Horse, starring my all-time favorite actor at that time, Richard Harris. I thought that A Man Called Horse was the coolest movie I ever saw. Now, in fairness, I saw it again recently, and in fairness, it's shite. But at the time, I thought it was the coolest movie I ever saw. And I thought Richard Harris was the coolest actor to ever raise a glass. And I thought to be called horse would be pure class. I even thought, now just for the record, okay, I didn't actually go through with it. Okay? But I even thought about giving my metaphorical right, whatchamacall, to be called horse. And I wasn't the only one. Half the fellas up and down the country did give their right metaphorical you-know-what to be called horse. There was an epidemic of fellas called horse up and down the country. You could not walk up the street and not meet a horse. How are you, horse? Good horse. Yourself, horse? Not a bother, horse. Tell me, horse, how is your mother? Well, horse, she's gone stark raving mad ever since I gave my metaphorical right gonad to be called horse. And she wasn't the only one. Half the mothers up and down the country were up on their high horse, traumatized out of their minds by their son's irresponsible behavior. They even formed a support group for themselves, a 12-step self-help support group. They call themselves mothers of sons who gave their metaphorical right, Leroy B, to be called horse anonymous. They would meet every night of the week in rooms up and down the country, sit down, gather around and share their experience. My name is Margaret, Maggie Mags. I'm sorry, it's my first meeting, I'm very nervous. Don't you be worried, Mags. Nobody's going to judge you here. We're all in the same sorry, sick, sad situation as yourself. Now, when you're ready, in your own words, off you go. Okay. My name is Mags. And my sons, Jack and Jerome, have only got one metaphorical stone dangling all alone in their respective half-empty metaphorical nut bags. Well done, Mags. Well done, girl. Sylvia Plathney, proud of that. You've admitted it. That's the first step. But I can't accept it. The names are not horse and horse. The names are Jerome and Jack. Don't worry, Mags. It will get better. Keep coming back. The whole country was on the verge of collapse. The very fabric of Irish family life torn right down the middle. On the one side, mother against son, son against mother. On the one side was the anti-horse faction, on the other side, the pro-horse faction. Every day of the week out in the streets, there'd be demonstrations, anti-horse demonstrations and pro-horse demonstrations. And the demonstrators were clashing. There was chaos on the streets. And to make matters worse, the fellow whose job it was to collect all the metaphoricals from the fellows who were willing to give their you-know-whats in exchange for whatever they considered to be the be-all and end-all, such in this case, to be called horse. He was so busy he was run off his feet. He needed a fleet of trucks coming behind him to collect all the metaphorical balls. He pulled into the side of the street, there'd be a queue a half a mile long, waiting up half a night long for your man to come along so they could give their metaphorical Leroy D's to be called horse. And on the other side of the street, there'd be a queue a mile long. A queue of fellas called horse. With only one metaphorical ball. They'd be queuing up the whole night long, along with their mothers, who had dragged their stupid sons along. They were sick and tired of their sons being called horse, and they were ashamed of their lives, of their sons having slack sacks. They even threatened to go on strike and refused to iron their sons' bright nylon shirts. It was the 60s. And their sons' bright nylon slacks unless they got the right balls back and went back to be called Billy and Jack. It was on the verge of collapse, and neither faction were willing to cooperate with the other faction. The whole country called on the government to take action, so the government called in the army and their crack force, the FCA. The bishops called on the whole country to fast and pray. The private of all Ireland called for reconciliation. The mothers of sons who gave the right balls to be called horse were calling on their sons' right balls reinstallation. The moderator of the Church of Ireland was calling for moderation. And Richard Harris, not surprisingly, said, "I don't believe in moderation." The Pioneer Association were calling for total abstinence. And again, Richard Harris, not surprisingly, said, "I don't believe in abstinence. Total or otherwise." It came as a complete surprise when the central bank called for devaluation of the pound, but no surprise when Richard called for another round. The chief rabbi of Ireland called for forgiveness. And the anti-Semitics called on the chief rabbi to mind his own fucking business. The media called for a mediator to be installed. But when the mediator was installed, the media were appalled to find out he was called horse, horse. And he had no metaphorical balls at all. The media did a U-turn and they recalled their call for him to be installed and instead called for him to be uninstalled unless he grew a pair of balls and went back to being called Jack. The pot was calling the kettle black. Ian Paisley was calling the Pope an antichrist just for the crack. And mothers and sons who gave the right balls to be called horse were calling on the fellow who collected their sons' right balls to give their sons' right balls back. John and Yoko were calling on everybody to give peace a chance. And Bianca Jagger called on Mick, for pity's sake, to stick to the song and the dance, and for once in his life to pull up his pants. The Dalai Lama called for peace. And Canon. Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, and I'm not making this up, I wish I was that good. Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, who later went on to be Pope Benedict, was calling Buddhism a form of auto-erotic self-harm. What the fuck that means, I don't know. And Robert Zimmerman was calling on everybody to work no more on Maggie's farm. Everybody, it seemed, was getting in on the act. Some fella, I can't remember who, but this fella, for some reason, don't know why, but somehow, God knows how, but anyhow, he decided to call a spade a spade. Now, this was blatantly obvious, most of us already, but obviously he liked stating the obvious, so he lectured us on spades. And Buffy Sainte-Marie, in a desperate plea for sanity, sang a catchy little ditty calling on everybody to turn their backs on all the misery and pain. And poor old Richard Harris was in terrible pain. because some stupid fecker went and left the cake out
in the rain.
And Richard was beside himself. He did not know if he could take it because it took so long to make it, and he would never have the recipe again.
Oh no!
The whole country was gone baluba. De Valera called for a truce. Richard said he didn't think a truce would be of any use, but believe it or not, a truce was what we got. A delicate truce, a precious truce. A hanging by a thread, don't sneeze or even breathe in case the thread might break and we lose the precious truce type of a delicate truce. The next step was going to be absolutely crucial. The whole country held its breath. De Valera called Richard and asked Richard, was there anything that Richard could do? After all, it was all his fault in the first place. He was the sole cause of the whole hullabaloo. And what, my friends, did Richard Harris do? He only went and made another movie called A Man Called Horse 2. And the whole fucking thing started up. Oh,